It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. It is 9.06 on this Thursday, the 15th of February, 2024. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. And as we kick the show, it's shrouded in controversy with Crowbargate. We've put this big metal pin up on... I've already had about 5 messages of pictures with crowbars. I can't really continue this other than to admit I think I'm wrong here. I thought crowbars were a particular thing, right? I'm not working in construction. I did work in construction, never come across one of these things, but apparently it is a crowbar. It's a type of crowbar, but I'm not going to admit that to Lee Gooch that he was possibly right. So me, Oisin, Donal, wrong. Lee Gooch, right. Okay, it seems. Anyway, listen, thanks so much for people who actually took the phones out, took a picture on site of them with one of these crow's bars and sent it in to us on Facebook. It's brilliant stuff. Listen, thank you very much indeed for that. All right, stick with us for the next 3 hours. We've got loads of features for you. We're going to keep across all the big news stories, the events, and plenty of features as well. Plenty of fun as well. So stay with us for 3 hours. It's a real mixed bag here on the 9 till noon show. 086 60 25,000 is your WhatsApp and text. Maybe you want us to settle a family argument. Have you got a sister or a brother or a father or a mother who insists they're right about something and you believe that, in fact, you are correct about something? We will settle your arguments on the show today. So if you have something, an internal argument or discussion point in your house, send it in to us. We will finish the argument. We will decide who is right or who is wrong. There's bound to be... discussions out there across the dinner table where someone insists that they're right and they believe you wrong or vice versa. Send in your squabbles to 086 60 25,000. WhatsApps and texts to that number or 07491 25,000. And we will settle them once and for all on the 9 till noon show. So there'll be no more argument at family events, no more argument over the dinner table. Who is right? Who is wrong? We will sort it out. Let us do that for you. So text them into us, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Don't forget, you can watch today's show. Most of our guests do. Go onto our YouTube channel on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, and you can watch us on your big screen there. Just type in Highland Radio Ireland into YouTube. Give us a like and a subscribe too, if you don't mind. It helps. We're across your mobile devices on that app and on Facebook too, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport, and on X, formerly Twitter. Radio, let's look at what's making... let me grab my chair because I'm a person of routine and my chair is far away. One second now. Just pull this chair up. I have a little chair beside me and I just don't feel right if it's not in the exact same spot that I expect it to be. Right, the Tyrconnell Tribune, coming less than a week ahead of a planned protest by the fishing sector against Fianna Fáil Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine, Charlie McConlogue, for his alleged mishandling of the industry. A Fianna Fáil party meeting last Friday in Killybegs was told that many of the current problems in the industry are the fault of the big boys here in this port. In comments that some in attendance at the Fianna Fáil meeting have described as delusional, a senior Fianna Fáil party member responded to a question from the floor, voicing concerns over the decline of the fishing industry in Killybegs and similarly in every port in the country by declaring that Fianna Fáil was fed up with the nonsense constantly coming out of Killybegs and that the party would refuse to pander to the demands of certain business operators and that there's no satisfying these people. A highly respected Fianna Fáil spokesperson claimed that Charlie McConlogue had the support of the right people in the industry and that he was one of the most progressive and hard-working marine ministers Ireland's ever had. Sources in Fianna Fáil told the Tribune, as well as displaying arrogance and a shocking disregard for the long-suffering fishing industry, people of Donegal and indeed nationwide, this statement by a senior Fianna Fáil rep begs the question of McConlogue's poor handling of the industry being his party's policy all along, or has the minister convinced his senior Fianna Fáil colleagues that he is in fact doing a great job for fishermen? Okay, controversy in Killybegs. The Donegal News this morning, a Letterkenny man who suffered 15 cardiac arrests in 1 year is hoping that life really will begin at 40 next month when he aims to undergo life-saving heart surgery in France. Chris Burrows is fundraising to help pay for €30,000 in costs relating to hospital treatment in Bordeaux. You get more on that story in the front and inside that paper today. The Derry News this morning, row over rates increase. Tempers became frayed as Derry City and Strabane District councillors met to strike the rate for the 2024-25 financial year. Council struck a district rates increase of 6.5%, which included a non-domestic rate of 37.7408 pence in the pound and a domestic rate of 0.6 pence in the pound at yesterday afternoon's meeting. Okay, let us go now on to the Farmers' Journal, one of the biggest selling papers in the country, if not the biggest selling paper in the country. Minister for Agriculture Charlie McConnell has moved to bypass the department's own IT system and payment mechanisms to pay 26,000 farmers waiting for delayed acres money. Farmers in the general stream will be paid €4,000 and farmers in the cooperation stream will be paid €5,000 by the end of the month. These flat rate interim payments will be made directly from the government and through a separate delivery system to Acres. Now, on to the Nationals and all over the RTE story, because there was another bombshell that, it has to be said, I think was dragged out of senior execs, the top brass effectively at RTE. RTE is facing a substantial tax bill over a secret six-figure golden handshake to former executive Breda O'Keefe. In the latest scandal to rock RTE, bosses at the station revealed its ex-chief's financial officer received an exit package of €450,000. Now, this information wasn't given freely as such. It was in the end. But I'll play you a bit of the audio here. It is a couple of minutes, but this is, it's not a couple of minutes, it's a minute. But this is quite significant. So this is RTE Director General Kevin Backhurst being questioned about this payment. How much was this lady paid?
And in terms of the voluntary exit package, what was the cost to RTE?
Of which voluntary exit package?
For Breda O'Keefe.
I can't say that. That's confidential, and I can't say...
I think it's really important, Mr. Backhurst, you put that into the public, because this is really important. You're building a new RTE. Mm-hmm. It needs to be transparent. Mm-hmm. It needs to be trustworthy, mm-hmm. with integrity. And also we need to see accountability. Now, you're under privilege here, mm-hmm. and it's in the public interest that mm-hmm. you provide that information to the committee.
Yeah, look, I would say two things. One is, as I said, we have had significant legal pressure over months to get this report out and to deal with this issue.
I accept
that. And there is a legal threat over this. I agree with you, transparency is important. I agree with you, it's important in this case. Breda O'Keefe was paid €450,000 to leave.
Can you repeat that?
€450,000.
And in terms of...
So there you have it. As I say, it wasn't exactly dragged out of him kicking and screaming, but the information wasn't necessarily forthcoming in the first instance. So now there is a tax liability arising as the redundancy did not meet the criteria for tax relief to be applied. And who's going to pay it? RTE, it seems. RTE has acknowledged it's got no estimate of the potential cost of the tax bill arising from Ms. O'Keefe's redundancy. There are calls for that money to be given back. €450,000 just to go away. Really quite remarkable. So the Irish Daily Mail, hand back your €450,000 RTE golden handshake. RTE's former chief financial officer, Breda O'Keefe, is facing calls to return the €450,000 golden handshake she received from the national broadcaster. As we just heard, RTE Director General Kevin Backhurst finally revealed the value of the controversial exit package yesterday. The package was not compliant with RTE scheme on offer and was never sanctioned by the executive board. And now the chair of the Public Accounts Committee, Brian Stanley, has demanded that Ms. O'Keefe pay back the money. He told the Irish Daily Mail, the right thing normally to do is pay it back. Now, I don't know, has Ryan Tubridy ever paid his money back, the money he got? Remember that €150,000 that was supposed to be paid back, or there were calls for it to be paid back? Will it ever be? Perhaps not. Elsewhere, we were talking last week about, you know, what we can do to protect our children online. I think we have a collective responsibility to ensure, no more so than we would allow them to walk into a massive supermarket, engage with strangers, be asked to give pictures to strangers in the real world. We wouldn't allow, never allow that to happen. But sometimes, unconsciously, It is happening in a social media space, and for young people nowadays, there's not a great deal of difference often between, you know, reality, real world, and sort of the online world. So what will the social media firms do to try and protect our children? Not much. Various social media firms, this is the Times, based in Ireland, refused to give an undertaking to facilitate age verification mechanisms on their respective platforms in a roundtable meeting with the government, the Minister for Education has said. Speaking to reporters at government buildings yesterday, Norma Foley said she had raised the subject of age verification with representatives for various platforms at the constructive and robust meeting, given that many children under the age of 13 are gaining access on social media sites. However, an undertaking to implement more robust age verification measures was not forthcoming at present. And the truth is it's not necessarily about the children in this. The greatest resistance, as I said last week, will come from adults who say, oh, well, the social media company's not getting my ID and all that type of stuff. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm in favour of it, but whilst we don't protect the children, every day they're being... potentially exploited. The Star this morning, Taoiseach Leo Varadkar and his Spanish counterpart have written to the President of the European Commission to express deep concern at the deteriorating situation in Gaza. I mean, it can't get much worse. In a joint letter to Ursula von der Leyen, Mr. Varadkar and Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez called for an urgent review of whether Israel is complying with its human rights obligations under the EU-Israel trade agreement. They described the expanded Israeli military operation in Rafah as posing a grave and imminent threat that the international community must urgently confront. They asked the Commission to propose measures to be taken by the EU if it considered that Israel is in breach of its obligation under the EU-Israel trade agreement. And those suggestions will now be considered. The deputy mayor of Drogheda has blasted the decision by a local hotel to put up refugees. The D Hotel on the banks of the River Boyne in County Louth Town will house 500 international protection applicants. But Drogheda Deputy Mayor Kevin Callan said it will ruin local business and tourism. The first arrivals are due to check in on March 5th, it's reported. Mr. Callan will be calling an emergency meeting of local reps and last night declared that the decision must be reversed. He said the announcement came without any prior consultation with Louth County Council or the elected representatives of the council to convert the town's largest hotel into an accommodation centre for international protection applicants and will be decimated. The local economy will impact on the town in the form of business closures and job losses. Some concern there, of course. And if you were watching the rugby or you've been on social media, you would have heard this guy. What a performer. Let's see if we can actually hear him. He is a cracking singer. All right, so that is Phil Coulter composed song. Music legend Phil Coulter said, "Toy show sensation Stevie Mulrooney is an absolute hero after his Ireland Call performance. After the 8-year-old appeared on last year's Late Late Show, he was invited to perform the anthem before Sunday's game against Italy. Coulter, 81, told fans on his Facebook page, "Stevie is an absolute hero. One of the best versions of the song I've ever heard." And there absolutely, no doubt, it is fantastic. But another thing, too, I noticed, the amount of negativity on social media surrounding that performance, which I don't get. I just saw a young lad singing his heart out, having the time of his life and making a memory that will last forever. But anyway, that's that. That's a run through some of the news, some of the papers today. What are you thinking, any of that? 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts. And we're still, if you want us to, after the fact that me and Lee had a bit of a row about what is or what isn't a crowbar, if you, in your family, amongst friends or whatever, have a topic that you completely disagree on that you need us to moderate on, to define the answer, to settle the row, feel free to text us 086 60 25,000 or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Okie doke. We're joined on the programme now by Larry Donnelly, Boston attorney, University of Galway law lecturer, political columnist too with the journal.ie. Larry, great to have you back on the show. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Great to be with you.
Yeah, and it is the year of elections right across the world, it might seem, and a lot of attention will be on what's happening in the United States. And it would seem that voters over there are becoming increasingly wary of America's two, as some would describe it, unelectable candidates. It looks like it is going to be a runoff between President Biden and President Donald Trump. I suppose your overview of the race, and would we I suppose we have to presume that it is going to be those two for the purpose of this conversation, Larry.
Yeah, I mean, at this stage, it looks very much like it's unavoidably going to be Joe Biden and Donald Trump, a rematch that, as you say, the American people don't really want. The opinion polling shows that the majority of Americans want neither individual to be the nominee. In terms of Trump, you know, look, he retains a huge stranglehold on the affections of a vast swathe of Republicans. And far from his legal troubles diminishing that support or hurting him, it actually seems to have expanded it. And we've seen one challenger after the other fall down. And now he only has Nikki Haley left to vanquish, and she is down 30 percentage points in her own home state, whose primary takes place next week. So Trump, you know, has a pretty clear route. Joe Biden.
But just in relation to Trump, too, and we'll go on to Biden. We're in this bizarre situation, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, that you would say, well, how is it possible that she could close that 30% gap? It would be a major controversy or something that would just blow the campaign apart. We've seen it in Ireland, we've seen it in Britain, whereby there's a particular interview and everything changes and everything can swing. But there is no controversy, it seems, that actually doesn't seem to strengthen the support of Donald Trump amongst those inclined to support him.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And you know, Haley is only holding on in the hope that something is going to land, that some element of his legal trouble is going to get so bad that it becomes untenable for him to continue. We've seen no signups whatsoever of that to date, but that's been our hope. What I would say, Greg, is that, you know, she's being funded by some very, very wealthy individuals. If she loses her home state by 30 points, those wealthy individuals are going to say, we're not going to throw good money away after bad, Nikki. And I suspect that'll be the end of the road for her.
And on to Mr. Biden. And this is a difficult one for me because, you know, we advocate an awful lot about older people and the important role they play in society. And I don't want to come across as if I'm judging Joe Biden on his age, but he is 81. And, you know, that's almost besides the point. If you listen to him speak, a lot of what he says doesn't make sense. And what I find really quite interesting about that is that if you look at some of the footage of it, the people in attendance cheer and whoop as if what he has said has made sense. And sometimes I question if it's me that's not hearing clearly. But, you know, when you take some of those factors together, you think, is this really the best person to be leading, you know, one of, if not the most powerful country in the world?
No. And quite frankly, he Joe Biden is not. I mean, look, I think your point about ageism is an important one. There's different types of 81. I think we all know 81-year-olds who could wipe the floor with us. So, you know, this is not an age thing, but there are different types of 81. And Joe Biden is, for lack of a better way of putting it, an old 81. And look, Democrats knew that he had these vulnerabilities, you know, for a long, long time. Yet they effectively boxed off the field of potential challenges and acceded fully to his ambition to seek a second term in the White House. Now, I think that was a misguided choice. Obviously, in fairness to Biden, he's the one person who has beaten Trump. He has had some successes in his presidency. He is the incumbent that carries a lot of power. But these are unique circumstances, I think, in this instance. And I'll put it to you this way, Greg. The reality is that Joe Biden is going to have to stand toe-to-toe on a debate stage with Donald Trump for three 90-minute debates. If any of us who watched footage or watched him, I just don't know if he's up to that. And again, Trump is at his own missteps. But people need to take this really important point. Trump plays the game by totally different rules to everybody else. It doesn't matter what he says, what he does, what he gets wrong, what he gets right. He's still going to have that fervent base of support. Joe Biden doesn't have that.
You see, in those debates, you and you've really suggested this, you know what you're going to get with Donald Trump. You know what I mean? But it's how it exposes President Biden. So in other words, Donald Trump can't really lose in those debates as such, can he? It can only be for Joe Biden to look completely incapable, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, the only way that Trump can lose is, and I think we did see this last time around, where Trump went on the attack about Joe Biden's son, who has battled, you know, an awful lot of his own demons. And I think he did so in quite a nasty way. He did so in the context of Joe Biden referring to the son who he tragically lost. Now, I think that did evoke a lot of sympathy for Joe Biden, because a lot of parents can say, hey, I have a son who's a screw up, but I would never leave his side or never abandon him. Whereas Trump sought to exploit that. So, yeah, he can push things too far. But on the flip side, and here's what Democrats behind closed doors are desperately worried about, is if what if Joe Biden has one of those senior moments on the debate stage? What if he loses track? What if there's a vacant expression on his face? It will be lethal to him politically.
I wonder what happened with Kamala Harris, because I'm not across the situation as much as many, not least you. But it kind of felt to me that, you know, after the last election, President Biden gets them over the line, then maybe starts to step back, and they sort of start grooming Kamala Harris as the next president. Do you think that was ever the plan, or what went wrong there, that they don't believe that they can back her and had to go, or probably felt they had to go with Biden?
Well, there are a couple of things here. You know, appearance aside, Kamala Harris is a vibrant, articulate, attractive politician. You know, she's got a good education, et cetera. She's got a great story to tell. That having been said, she is one of these politicians who, the more people seem to get to know her, the less they like her. Remember, she ran last time around. She had 35,000 people at her announcement. She raised $40 million in a week. And then a couple months later, she was gone. You know, so she has her own issues, and her numbers in terms of favorability are even lower than Joe Biden's. The second point to make is that despite that, the Biden team, and Biden has a very loyal group around him, and Joe Biden has been running for president for an awful long time. And now that he finally reached the Holy Grail, the last thing that his loyalists were going to allow was for his vice president to upstage him. And again, knowing that he's, you know, an elderly man, knowing that she has a lot of dynamic qualities, they were determined that she wouldn't upstage him. So what did they do? They gave her the most unthinkable task in American politics. They said, your special assignment is going to be the southern border. God himself could not sort out the southern border. So in addition to the low profile, she's been given a thankless task. Hence, her numbers are really, really poor.
Funny story coming out this morning. Not funny, but interesting. Russian President Vladimir Putin said he'd rather a Joe Biden presidency over Donald Trump ahead of the US elections in November. Mr. Biden was more experienced, predictable person, he said in remarks, which the BBC say are sure to raise eyebrows. Is that an endorsement, or is that meddling? It's an interesting.
I just don't know. You wouldn't get into Vladimir Putin's head. I don't know what that is all about. I mean, I think, you know, if we take a step back from it, I think objectively most people would say that Donald Trump has certainly sent a lot more friendly signals in Vladimir Putin's direction than Joe Biden has. So who knows what Putin is getting at with this kind of intervention.
And just finally, facing into this election, and it'll be about, you know, Biden versus Trump. But there's the bigger picture here in terms of, you know, a shift maybe in the world order, the importance of the dollar, you know, across the globe, and also to the what seems to be, I can't see how America can sustain its debt levels. I mean, even if you look at the interest on that debt alone, the numbers are absolutely mind-boggling. And then there is the issue, of course, with the southern border and what have you. I mean, really, it's almost as if Biden and Trump are, it's a sideshow as to the great challenges that that country is facing globally. You know, it almost feels like we're on a, it almost feels like we're at a changing point in history.
You're absolutely right. We are at a changing point in history. You mentioned, you know, the myriad structural issues that are there and, you know, the cold, hard facts of it. There is also the societal problem, the societal malaise in the United States, which I think has resulted from some of what you said and has, you know, engendered the Trump presidency, to be frank, and is the reason why he is where he is. But I think to be perfectly selfish about it from a European point of view, I think these conversations need to start now. In the event of a Trump presidency, Europe is going to have to recalculate and recalibrate its defense and a whole range of other different things. And even if Biden wins, or even if Democrats win in future, America is going to be a much more inward-looking place as Americans demand they face up to the issues you mentioned. So it's going to change the global power dynamic in ways we can't even fathom right now.
Right, okay. Fascinating stuff, as always. Larry, thank you very much for your time. It's greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
Take care. Larry Donnelly, Boston attorney, University of Galway law lecturer, political columnist with the journal.ie. Why are we talking about the US presidential elections? Because what happens over there, either directly or indirectly, has a significant impact on your lives. Although sometimes it's hard to see that. I don't know why Charlie McConlogus, Minister for the Marine, says a listener, because Charlie wouldn't know one end of a boat from the other, says a listener. Hi, Greg. You'd be on about how to keep our children safe online. Was wondering if you could give us some tips to keep them safe from the migrants. Well, there is an actual danger to the children that are online, because if you speak to Childline, the amount of children that are being groomed, abused, exploited in this country, it's crazy. It's higher than it ever was. Is it down to migrants? No. There's an old meme the internet where it's like Spider-Man, and he says he's pointing over there and pointing over there at the same time, and they're effectively saying, you know, don't look at this, look at that. If you could tell me what the present danger to children is, we can discuss that, no problem. Greg, do you have to pay your TV license? I got another reminder in the post. By law, you have to pay your TV license. Now, whether you do or not, that's your decision. Many have chosen not to. But I wouldn't be not paying it in the hope that at some point, you know, Sinn Féin come into power and there's an amnesty. You know, you could be pursued for that. They obviously have their teeth into you. So you eventually are going to have to pay it, or else you're going to be summoned. Hi, Greg. What do you think the government is paying 800,000 euro for transport pets from Ukraine to Ireland? When Leo was asked, he said he didn't know about it. That came up in the show yesterday. We discussed that with the billions that are knocking around, 800,000 euro. I don't know. A lot of people are pet lovers, and a lot of people wouldn't want pets to be abandoned behind them. I don't know. It's up to you guys. What do I think is irrelevant? The money to me is like confetti at this stage. It's being chucked around everywhere. I find it hard to get too worried about 800,000, if that makes sense. All right. Okay, we're going to be back with our next guest on the show after these. Now, you would be familiar with what's going to be and is and will continue to be until it's resolved a contentious issue, especially in the mouth of an election. It's around a number of new built houses at Lochfern Heights in Milford, which were earmarked for those on the housing list, but have been lying empty with claims that they're being used to house refugees, statements that that's not going to be the case. And then also conversations about how these houses, these 17 houses, can be taken off the private owner of them, the private developer, and be made available for social housing. Now, the council have issued a very detailed press release in relation to this. The developer entered into a turnkey procurement process with Donegal County Council on foot of an advertisement in January 2018 and progressed through the various steps and stages of the process, including obtaining the various statutory approvals such as planning permission and so on. Immediately prior to commencement work on the site, the developer tendered his final costs to the council in 21. The council subsequently obtained department approval in February of that year in the sum of 3.47 million to acquire the 17 houses for the purpose of social housing. This was based on the maximum construction cost ceiling at the time of construction. The houses were designed and laid out to meet the specific needs of the council for Milford and the surrounding areas. The houses were substantially completed in July 22 as a result of delays in completing the construction works due to COVID-19 and inflation costs. The developer sought an uplift increase on his tendering costs. The council employed an independent quantity surveyor to identify appropriate and relevant cost increases in line with inflationary cost increases and department guidance. An increased acquisition offer was made then to the developer in March of last year, which to date has not been accepted. The uplift in cost amounted to €361,000. The uplift calculations were consistent with other developments that were appropriate within the turnkey process at the time. So the original fee, €3.47 million. The developer says costs have increased. The councillor had a look at that and said, look, we'll give you another €361,000 because this is consistent with other developments and what have you. The department will sanction the monies based on the year that the construction costs were incurred, which was 21 and 22. It's acknowledged that since 22, the department's sanction would be for a higher figure in respect of the construction years 23 and 24 for the same houses. This is based on the inflation and costs prevailing at the actual time of construction. The council has allocated significant resources to the delivery of this project and remains committed to acquiring these units for the existing social housing need, subject to contract. Council officials most recently met with the developer on the 10th of January this year and again reaffirmed the council's offer to acquire the 17 housing units. In the context of the developer seeking to sell the houses to an approved housing body, which was one of the suggestions, it is important to note that it's not accepted nor appropriate practice for public bodies funded by the state to be engaged in a competitive situation to acquire the same houses where the state, through different funding mechanisms, would in essence fund the acquisition of the houses, i.e. The council's offer is on the table, backed by the government, and to go through a approved housing body, it could be seen as a competitive situation. That's my read on it, and I'm open to correction, which I might be in a moment. Such a scenario would result in driving up the cost of the houses for the taxpayer, and indeed would have a knock-on effect to the private housing market with increased prices. So I thought, in fairness, someone sat down and went through that. Important to read it almost in its entirety. Declan Mahean's an independent candidate in the upcoming elections. What's your take on that council press release, Declan?
Good morning, Greg. I suppose the first thing to say is I think we're finally getting to the crux of the whole issue here. This is a statement that has been sought after from the council for several months now at this stage. So it's very welcome that the council has finally put pen to paper and outlined the issue from their, I suppose, perspective. My take on it is this. What we have in that statement is, as you said there, Greg, a lot of detail, but there's actually quite a key omission in the statement as well. And that is that last year in 2023, the council were actually, in writing, confirmed that they were supporting the approved housing body, which is Cooperative Housing Ireland, in their attempts to acquire the 17 units. So that's a huge thing. The council had initially decided that they were out of the running because they couldn't afford the price that the developer was looking for, and they weren't willing to meet the price that he was seeking. They then decided, okay, well, we're going to support an application to CAF, which is the funding structure through the Department of Housing, to purchase the houses through an approved housing body, which is Cooperative Housing Ireland, so that the houses can still remain in the social housing stock. And crucially, and this is really the main thing here that I think we really need to focus on, that they would be delivered for 17 families in the Milford area on the housing waiting list, which should be everyone's priority. So there was a stage between June 2023 up to October 2023 when the council were actively engaged in supporting Cooperative Housing Ireland from doing exactly what they've now said in this statement that they cannot do.
But would that not be an acceptable practice, Declan, that there's ongoing negotiations? I'm not sure if it's with the same staff within the council. But to also pursue options, to pursue other options. Is that not responsible? Is that not responsible from the council to say, right, we'll look at these both options and see actually which is the best way of delivering houses?
Well, absolutely, Greg. But surely if they were allowing Cooperative Housing Ireland to go ahead with the deal at the amount of money that the developer was looking for, then inherent is that the council were accepting that they were out of the running at that stage because they were essentially handing over responsibility to the approved housing body to purchase them instead because they had a greater ability to meet the price that the developer was looking for. So in that sense, you know, there's a paper trail, a very clear paper trail, some of which I have seen and I had sent on to a producer, Caroline, which shows exactly that. So, you know, this anti-competitive or anti-competition directive that they have been citing, or kind of principle that they've been citing in that statement today, it would seem that that, you know, wasn't relevant last year, but now it is relevant this year.
Yeah, but in fairness, Declan, in fairness, right? Yeah. So there was the contractor. There was an initial agreement, which we understand as to why people come back out of it, of 3.47 million. These houses that were constructed in the years that they were constructed. He says, right, that's not really enough because it actually cost me more to build these houses. So they went back and had a look at it and say, right, we accept that. There's a €361,000 uplift for you. So you'll get your 3.47 million and we'll give you an extra €361,000 because we want these houses for social housing. And that uplift, obviously, is not based on how much it would cost to build them now or how much you could sell them for now or last year. It's the 21-22 period. So the council did go back. They got more money. The contractor's getting more money than he initially wanted. There comes a point, does there not, whereby we have to applaud the council for being responsible with public money. They've put more money on the table, and some might say, well, is this person holding out to maximise? You know what I mean? Like, so what else can the council do here?
I think that's completely fair. I think that if it's beyond the council's means, where they can't meet the price that's been looked for, and also just to point out that the uplift works out at about €17,000 per unit of the 17 units. So I think a lot of people will kind of will realise that 17,000 of an increase on the total cost of building a 2 or 3 bed house in that period is actually relatively modest.
But we'd also need the figures from the contractor, from the developer, by the way. You know, like say for instance, I don't know where he sourced the materials or they sourced the materials. You know what I'm on about? Like we don't have all the facts as to why the cost of building these houses increased. We can only trust that the council has said, right, in terms of what we can judge from an inflationary perspective, it would have cost 361,000 more to build these houses. But they can't cover all of extra costs that a developer incurs, because how can we account for, and I'm not saying this happened, a poor decision in terms of ordering the wrong windows or something? Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. But the fact, and as you say, we don't have those figures, we don't have those facts. But the fact that we do have is that, and as you said, the council have decided that they don't want to pursue it for that price from, I suppose, you know, a financial standpoint and out of concern for taxpayers' money. But it is the council's prerogative to manage its own finances. But my issue is that they should not then go and block someone else from buying the houses who can afford the amount that the developer is looking for.
But Declan, which would
deliver the houses,
of course,
for the 17 families.
I get you, but
it's not just about prudence.
Okay, for that housing body...
It's also about not blocking.
Of course, for that housing body, though, where does that money actually in reality come from? It comes from the state.
So the financing firm comes from the state.
Exactly. And then the council funding, the council, I understand, Declan, but the council money also comes from the state. So you could have a situation, and I'll say it's me, not this contractor. I've got 18 houses, and I say, I don't like the offer the council's given me, which is money from the state. I might actually deal with this approved housing body, which also has access to money from the state, which might give me more money. I mean, can we allow developers or contractors to have that kind of pick and choose situation? Why would any contractor then not pull out of a procurement process with the council if down the line they can get more money out of an approved housing body? Do you not see that in terms of accountability, transparency, and delivery of property with the taxpayer in mind, that the council kind of has to take a stand on this.
Absolutely. And this is the stand that they've taken, is that they're not going to purchase the houses because they don't have the means to do that. I think that one of the things that this has highlighted is that there is obviously a discrepancy in the system which allows funding for housing bodies to be able to pay more money, because there is private money involved in those transactions as well. It's not as simple to say that it comes from one part of the taxpayers' money or another part of the taxpayers' money, and it's all from the same pot. An approved housing body has a different funding structure, which is a mixture of private money and also taxpayers' money, which will always allow them to offer more money should it come to it. One of the issues that this has also highlighted is the pre-COVID turnkey acquisitions were not set up with contracts. Mm. They were set up with an agreement which allowed people, either party, to walk away thereafter. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what has happened here. So this is all within the regulations mm-hmm. that existed at that point in time. Yeah. This is a failing of housing policy again.
Okay.
I mean, everything that we come back to,
but I get
when
you,
we talk
Declan,
about
but how do we
housing,
know? But how do we know that?
How
do we know that 3.78 million is not actually a good price that the council's offering for 17 houses? I mean, 3.78 million is a lot of money. Well,
it is a lot of money, but it's for 17 units.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, what we have to look at is how are these houses going to be acquired for social housing? If the developer has said that they cannot sell to the council because it is not meeting their costs and their expected profits on that, but they can sell to an approved housing body.
Yeah, but local authorities can't be held over barrels by developers, though. This would set a precedent whereby there would be no point even entering it to a turnkey procurement, because down the line, if a better offer comes, then those houses are lost to social housing. That at some point, the council surely has to draw a line in the sand, Declan, and say, this is how we're delivering houses, 3.78 million for 17 units. That's the price.
Sorry, Greg, but that's actually not true, right? Because now, whenever anyone enters into a turnkey acquisition, they have contracts signed.
Right, okay.
And so therefore,
understood.
Whenever a developer, you know, so,
thanks
so that
for the
means
correction.
That
that's
a developer cannot now hold the council over a barrel
understood.
For future projects, because contracts will be signed at the time of the agreement, whereas this was not the case prior to that. So you have, at the minute, a number of developments in the county that are in similar position, where there are houses being built under turnkey acquisitions pre-COVID with no contract, and the developers are looking for more money because of the increase in costs, and now the council is not supporting them to be able
your
to
presumption
purchase
though is and generally across mechanism. The board, your presumption is because if it's an increase in costs, do you know what I mean? Like, we don't know. We don't really know, unless we got a look at the books, a look at how the building process was done, how things were acquired, if there were no mistakes that the taxpayer might be expected to. You know what I mean? We can't. I mean, you're taking not this developer, because I'm not speaking specifically about them, but you're saying that if they say, right, the prices have gone up, now we want this, that we just bow to that. I mean, that just says the council over a barrel, Declan. Do you not see that whilst we want these houses, of course, we can't have the local authority and on our money, because we can see what's happening at the hospital down in Dublin, you know, someone say, right, actually, you know, I need another 500 because the cost has gone up a little bit and I have to maintain my profits.
Yeah, 100%. No, I understand that. But as I've said, this is a handful of projects that are currently in the county where this is affecting. This will not happen again because the regulations have changed. The housing policies that we have had in this country have privatised the delivery of social housing. So, Greg, you and I both know that the privatisation agenda that has been driven in this country for the past 20, 30, 40 years has resulted in scenarios like this, where developers, whether it's for a hospital or whether it's for a social housing project, will invariably look to make profits. That's the nature of privatisation. So again, it's a failing of housing policy that we've been left into this position.
Briefly, Declan, please.
What I want to say is here's the crux of the thing at the minute. The houses are sitting there vacant. There is no deal and there's no negotiation between the developer and the council. There is between the developer and the social housing, or sorry, the Cooperative Housing Ireland approved housing body. So there's only one deal to be made. The council are currently blocking that. They have omitted from that statement today that for 6 months, almost 6 months last year, they were pursuing that as an option, but changed course just before Christmas. So clarity on why that is would be very necessary. This statement is very welcome, but there's another statement.
But do you think there's a, what the figure is? Do you know the figure that is on the table between this approved housing body and the contractor?
Yeah, well, from my memory, Greg, when the contractor was on with you himself there a few weeks ago, that was made clear in terms of the amount was obviously greater than what the council are offering, but it's lesser than what.
Yeah, but what is the figure? I wonder what the figure is. Yeah, but they weren't built today. They were built. They were built in 2020 and 2021. They weren't built today.
Yes, of course they were. Yeah.
So we have to compare apples with apples. We can't compare apples with oranges. I mean, I would love the car I bought 6 years ago to get new car money for it now. But these costs for the contractor were occurred in 2021. Comparing the price of these houses to how much it would cost to deliver them now is a little bit disingenuous, isn't it? I know you're not doing it.
But the difference in... No, and believe me, Greg, I am not on the side of the developer. I'm not on the side of the councillor. I am on the side of those 17 families who want these houses.
I can tell
you that the difference in the figure between the uplifted figure that the council have offered and what contractor has secured in a deal or should be able to secure in a deal from Cooperative Housing Ireland is in the ballpark figure of €500,000.
Okay.
So that's the difference in the two figures, half a million
Listen,
for 17
Declan,
houses.
Thanks for the conversation. I genuinely appreciate it. Declan Meehan, independent candidate in the upcoming local elections.